going to have all we can handle just to finish chapter two. So let's have at it and see what we can do, because there's so much going on. When we left off last week, we were talking about the question of what in the world was going on in the field of Boaz. And not just in Boaz's field, of course, but what is going on in the fields in general. We read through, we didn't read through, but I showed you that the Torah tells us numerous times in multiple contexts that there's a mitzvah of providing for the needy. And we said there's a mitzvah of leket, and there's a mitzvah of shichacha, and there's a mitzvah of peah. You're supposed to be taking care of the needy. But then when you look in chapter 2, and you see that Ruth says, I'm going to go try to find somebody who is going to favor me, like that shouldn't be needed. And Boaz clearly thinks that there are problems. Boaz needs to tell the crew in sentence 9, don't touch her. In sentence 15, don't shame her. In sentence 16, don't yell at her. And then at the end, when she comes back and she reports to Naomi and she says, yeah, I was in Boaz's field and he was so wonderful. She says, oh, you should go there again rather than go somewhere else where you might get harmed. Like what kind of environment was this? So our first approach, which we brought last time, the courtesy of Professor Meltzer and the Dat Mikra, was to suggest it's not such a bad place. However, the workers are human beings, and some of them are better human beings than others. And that's just the way it goes. So, the goal for her is, I want to find somebody who's going to be nice to me. That was our initial approach. And we noted that throughout Tanakh, you find that there were some who fulfilled Matanot Aniyim, giving to the needy, and you have others who did not. So, it's not so surprising to see in this case that there were better and there were worse, and that's that. That's one approach. And we started on the second approach. And the second approach, actually, I don't think we did, but anyway, the second approach that I'm going to bring is that it's not that the fields were a bad place for Jews who were going around gleaning, but remember that Ruth is a Moabite. A Moabite convert, but a Moabite. And Moabites are not going to be welcome. We already saw in Devarim, where the Torah says that they don't get to marry in because they didn't greet us properly, they didn't help us out. We talked about how in Yeshaya chapter 16, we are told that they're known for not sheltering people, not taking people in. So maybe turnabout, they're going to reject her. Notice, if you look at chapter 2, sentence 6, when Boaz shows up in the field, and he asks after her, who is this, right? Look what his fellow in the field says to him. Vayan hanar hanitzav ala kotzrim, the youth, the young man, whatever he is, who is in charge of the harvester, says, Na'ara Moaviyahi hashava im Naomi miste Moav. She is a Moabite who came back with Naomi from the fields of Moab. So twice, right? It's not enough to say she's a Moabite. She's a Moabite who came back from Moab. Thank you very much. A little redundancy there, but he's trying to accentuate it. So Professor Ziegler in source number one, I'm a professor, no, she's a doctor. But if you take a look at source number one, I actually realized looking at the sheet that I only translated part of the source. I didn't translate the second part. So we're going to have to come back to that. But take a look at what's there. Ruth medaberet betor Moaviyah. Ruth speaks as a Moabite. When she says, I want to find someone who's going to show me favor, she's speaking as a Moabite. Mikevan shehi tofeset et motza'a kekazeh hamonea mimena limamesh et zechuta lelakeit kechol ha'aniyim. She gets it. She realizes that her lineage is the sort that's going to make it hard for her to realize her rights. She knows that they're going to give her a hard time. Hamoavim lo sipku lechem u'mayim levnei Yisrael. As we said, the Moabites did not provide bread and water for the Jews. Ubehet aim, so correspondingly, ha'umay Yisrael mitzuvah lo tidrosh shlamam v'tovatam kol yamecha le'olam. Don't seek their welfare. That's what the Jews are told. Don't seek the welfare of the Moabites. Yitachein, kirut masika shemoaviot lo nehenot miotan zechuyot berurot magiot la'aniyim ha'acherim basadeh. She realizes, I don't have the same rights as everybody else. That's her expectation. And therefore, she says, I better find someone who is going to show me favor. Susan. You gotta unmute.
How do you know she's a Moabite?
So that's an interesting question. Ibn Ezra takes one view on this. I didn't go into it on the sheet. Ibn Ezra suggests two possibilities. One is dress, that there were certain cultural norms in different societies and she dressed as a Moabite. Alternatively, he suggests that Moabites may have actually appeared different. He says in different climates, to use his word, people have different appearances. They live just across the river. I mean, they're not, you know, they're not from another land. Nonetheless, that's a suggestion he gives. You could add a third component, which is when busks who she is, Boaz finds out all about her. Not just that she's a Moabite who came from Beit Lechem, but that she was with Naomi and all of that. So the story is around. People are aware.
People talk to Moab all this time. Couldn't Naomi have just come back and not said anything? Why should she be like you said, there were other Jews possibly in Moab.
Yes.
Couldn't she, like, should she convert it, unless she converted it in Israel, on that side, not the Moab?
So, the question of what the conversion was like is a good one for another time, but fundamentally the answer is, as Rebecca said, people talk. Word gets around. That's the way of human beings. Chana, you were going to say?
She may be white in general, but that when she uses it, that she doesn't know Zahuta, and that it's from her perspective, she was a Geoid at this point.
Yes.
So she knows that she's a, the thing is, on their side, maybe they're not true, but she is not, she knows that she has the right.
Yes. She just doesn't know if they're going to, actualize it. Are they going to treat her that way?
Zahuta. Zahuta means her.
Right, yeah, she knows her right, but she doesn't know that they're going to, you know, as an Israeli, right? You know you have zichuyot. That doesn't mean that the person in the office is going to give them to you.
Right, but Yael Ziegler says that she knows that she doesn't know if it's based on zichut. So that's what the...
No, but that's not the language is not meduyak. Okay. That's the way I would read that. And in fact, she goes further with it in the second half of source number one. And I apologize. I missed translating it when I went through my sheet. So it's not translated on the sheet, but I'll just explain it to you, outside of that. If you take a look at,
can I say something?
You know, Ricky, hang on 1 second, because I'm going to finish the sentence first. If you take a look at sentence six, back on the sheet, sentence seven, where this agent of Boaz in the field is explaining Ruth's background, and he says, "Ze shivta habayit ma'at," she's been sitting in the house for a little bit. So the way that Dr. Ziegler reads it is that she was sitting in the house because she wasn't allowed in the field. Ruth showed up. The workers didn't want her there. In fact, we said last time that she entered other fields and left, entered other fields and left. She's being pushed away in the other fields. The workers here don't want her there. However, they have a problem because, as we're going to see in a little bit, Boaz takes this mitzvah very seriously of providing the gleanings. And therefore, they know we can't get rid of her. So they say to her, you wait on the side. When the boss shows up, we're going to let him decide whether you belong in this field or not. So the way that Dr. Ziegler reads it is that she is not having an easy reception in the field. Yes, Ricky.
First of all, it makes sense, the third part. Once he knows, once the workers know that she is Naomi's daughter-in-law, then they know the whole story. It's a small place. But what I wanted to say, that once Boaz hears that she is Naomi's daughter-in-law, recognizes Mishpucha, he doesn't seem to acknowledge that he, oh yeah, I know him, she's related to me. So she doesn't, he doesn't tell the workers, yes, she is related to me, and so it should be extra nice. He just pretends he doesn't.
Really? I don't think so. Look at what he says. In sentence 11, Boaz says to her, I was told everything that you did and how you abandoned your family back in Moab and you came here, and may God reward you. Look at you. You're such a wonderful person. And then he goes on to say, after she gives her response in sentence 13, in sentence 14, he says, you should come eat. And he has the workers not bother her, even though she's collecting them on the sheaves and eating with them. And he tells the workers to give her stuff. I think just the opposite. So much so that we asked the question last time of, is he this nice to everybody, or is he only this nice to Ruth? No, he just tells them, be nice to her. He's not related to Naomi. Let's be clear. He's related to Elimelech. She's the other side of the family. I think he makes very clear that he wants her to be helped and supported. And that's, you know, again, the question of, well, what about everybody else? So our first approach was to say, the fields aren't so bad, but some of the field workers are better and some are worse. Our second approach is to say, the fields aren't so bad for people in general, but a Moabite's gonna have issues. And now we come to our third approach. And the third approach has two parts to it. So 3A and 3B. 3A, it's actually a hostile and dangerous environment. And this was something I had started to mention last time and had just reorganized it for this time. But take a look on your sheet at source number 3. An early example of gun control. Mishnah says, regarding collecting pe'ah, Pe'ah ein kotzrin ota b'magalot, ve'ein okrin ota b'kardumot. When the needy people come to collect pe'ah, the corner of the field that's supposed to be left for them, they're not allowed to use scythes and sickles, sharp blades. Kedesha lo yaku ish es re'ehu, so that one person isn't going to hit the next. And as the commentators explain on this Mishnah, the fear is, each one is desperate to get a portion that they want. They're holding dangerous weapons. How hard is it for one of them to lash out against the other? So we don't allow those weapons out in the field. Even though they're legitimate as tools for harvesting, we don't want them turning on each other when they get angry at each other. This conveys a sense of what's actually going on in the field. It's not a nice, bucolic, friendly environment in which everybody's helping everybody else by any stretch of the imagination. And last time I showed you source number 3 from the Malbim. I'm not going to read it inside this time because, you know, again, we read it last time. I just brought it again because it fit. But you remember what the Malbim said there. Malbim said that Ruth was concerned about the rough and tumble of collecting. She says, I am not going to go get Peah at all. I am only going to go get Leket. Because Peah was a terrible environment. The Mishnah says that it was not supposed to be distributed to them. It was supposed to be abandoned, and the needy people would just take it, and everyone would take whatever they could get. And therefore, she says, I'll take the Leket. The Leket, we explained last time, is the stuff that the workers drop. And that apparently is more scattered, and there's more space, and therefore she felt safer taking the leket. This is not like a good place to be. Yes, Gita. You had to unmute.
It seems that if you're trying to help the poor by providing them with food, you've set up a very competitive system.
Yeah.
And by definition, it can be violent. I mean, who's gonna police? I got that first. I touched that first. I picked that first.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen when aid comes to unfortunate people who are very hungry? We always see footage of this. I don't think we can fault anybody. They're hungry people, and they're trying to get as much as they can for their families.
Right. No, the issue is not fault. I agree with you 100%. The issue is not fault, but this is a reality. It's something that comes up from time to time when there are certain mitzvot which we are used to viewing as very humane and merciful and nice. But then you look at the implementation and you start to wonder, right? An example from a news story a couple of years ago was Shiluach HaKein, sending away the mother bird before you take the eggs. And so there was some news story in New Jersey about a family that was disturbing geese in order just to chase them away so that they could take the eggs. And it didn't look good. They, leave aside, you know, the trouble you can get into when you mess with geese. But, like, it's not this nice, you know, well, we're being really good to the mother birds. That way she won't see when the egg is being taken. Like, these mitzvot are not so straightforward, and the same thing is true here. Yes, it's certainly motivated by helping them, but the implementation of this is going to be rough. And especially, yes, Janine? You're muted. Yes, no, it's the that's where we're going next with this. It's not just about the needy people, it's about the workers as well. And that brings me to my next point here, which is that Beit Lechem is not a great place. Beit Lechem is just not a great place. The Beit Lechem in the era of the Shoftim has two stories, right? There are two stories that happen in Beit Lechem. One, the Levi from Beit Lechem, who becomes priest for Avodah Zarah, or whatever that was, with the idol of Micha. And number two, the concubine from Beit Lechem, who is raped and murdered in the story of Pilegesh B'Giv'ah. That's what we know about Beit Lechem. This is not, you know, a good place to be. And then you add in the Gemara in Shabbos in source number four. We talked about this Gemara last week because we were looking at the text which says that Ruth came and went. Vatelech vatavo vatelaket basadeh. It says she went to the field, and she came back, and she gathered in the field, and the order of it is very strange. It should have been vatelech vatelaket basadeh vatavo. Right? She went, she gathered, and then she came back. Your verbs are out of order. So Rabbi Elazar says, no. Shahalcha uvat halcha uvat ad shematz abnei adam hamehuganin lelechimahem. She went looking for a good crowd to be with. She is trying to find good people. Now, this is where Dr. Ziegler said that it was because she was getting kicked out of the fields as a Moabite. But the simple read of what the Gemara is saying here is that she's looking for a good crowd to be with. And remember, we asked the question, why doesn't Naomi go out to glean? And one answer we gave was because this is a dangerous place. So my third answer is yes, this is a rough environment. Absolutely. And here we have to add something. And this is the point that Dr. Ziegler makes that's very interesting. This is a battle, according to her, that Boaz fights with his workers in an ongoing way. She paints Boaz as a very hands-on boss. We're going to see in chapter 3, he sleeps in the granary to guard the grain. He's here touring the fields. And he's presented as a religious employer who is concerned for how his crew is going to observe the mitzvot of providing for the needy. We noted, he comes out and he says to the workers, Hashem imachem, God should be with you. He doesn't ask, how is the grain? He doesn't ask, how is the harvest? Of course, you could say he did, but the text didn't see fit to bring that part of the conversation. But that in and of itself is significant. The text doesn't show us his conversation about that. What the text does show us is Boaz's concern that God should be with you. And now take a look at source number 5. She'elot shel Boaz, Hashem imachem. When Boaz asks, is God with you? That's the way she reads it. Mashma'uta she'ela yishira la'ovdim. He is asking a direct question to the workers in the fields. Ha'im atem shomrim ala halacha ba'odchem kotzerim basadeh. Are you guarding the halacha? Are you fulfilling these mitzvahs while you're out there harvesting? Is God with you? Are you doing what God told you to do? And kriyazunit mechad ayedei tshuvat hakotzim l'shelato shel Boaz yivarechecha Hashem. And that read of what Boaz is saying is supported by the response. God should bless you. Why are those words significant? She goes on to explain. Shuvatam mazkira et hapasuk hametaer et hapras hanitan bavur shmirah shel chukim akshurim lehitnahalut mul aniyim basadeh. Look at the Torah and its description of the reward if you do what you're supposed to do. If you give your gifts to the needy, the Torah says, Ki siktsor k'tircha v'sadecha v'shochachta omer basadeh lo sashuv lekachto. When you forget a stalk or a sheaf in the field, don't go back and get it. La ger la yasom v'lamana yihyeh. It goes to the stranger. It goes to the orphan. It goes to the widow. L'man yivarechecha Hashem alokecha b'chol ma'aseh yadecha. So that Hashem, your God, will bless you in all that you do. So says Dr. Ziegler, Boaz asks them, is God with you? Their response is, yivarechecha Hashem, because we are doing what we're supposed to be doing. God will bless you, because that's the reward when you actually fulfill matnot aniyim, the gifts for the needy. So Boaz, in this read, is showing up to make sure that the workers are doing what they're supposed to do, because Boaz knows what often happens out in the fields. You follow? But there's more to support this. Not just that. In the middle of saying was that Boaz presents here as a religious employer who is doing his best to make sure that his workers are going to fulfill the job that they have. And yes, this is within the view that Boaz is a good guy.
Could that be that he realized that he was punished by the death of his children, that maybe he just started to be a little bit more religious, because he was quite manipulative earlier with all his kids
If you take the view that the Gemara does about Boaz, then yes, you could say that maybe he learned a lesson then. The negative view of Boaz would then imply that he's being redeemed, whether it's here, whether it's through Ruth. You could read that in different ways. Just to note, though, how Dr. Ziegler's opinion is supported by a Mishnah. If you take a look at source number 6 on the sheet, and this is pointed out by Rabbi Bachrach in Imashal Malchut, the Mishnah there is talking about how the mitzvah of Peah is carried out. And it says, Gimel Ibayot Beyom. There are 3 appearances each day. And the commentators explain what that means is that there are 3 times during the day when the boss is supposed to show up in the field. B'shachar, uvachatzot, uvmincha. Morning, midday, and afternoon. 3 times a day the boss is supposed to show up. Why? Says the Talmud Yerushalmi, B'shachar mipnei haminikot. In the morning, for the nursing women. Uvachatzot mipnei hatinokot. Midday, for the young ones. Uvmincha mipnei hanemoshot. And in the afternoon, for the sake of the elderly. What are you talking about? The commentators explain, the idea is that the boss is supposed to show up in order to make sure that the gleaners are each going to get what they need. The women who are nursing are going to need to get early in the morning. So make sure that you show up then to help them. Then, middle of the day, you'll get the younger gleaners. They'll show up in the field at that point. And then finally, the elderly, takes them longer to get to the field, so they're going to show up in the afternoon, so make sure that you come in then in order to help them. So Boaz is playing that role by doing this. Not only that, one more piece to this from the Malbim. Take a look at source number 7. Remember that when Boaz shows up in the field, Susan, I see on my phone that you're raising your hand. It's just a little trickier to manage this sort of thing on my phone. So if you want to give me your question now, and then you can lower the hand, because I can't lower it for you. Usually I would. Susan?
Yeah, no, I thought I did it. Okay, my question is, I'm looking at my commentaries on Pesach 6:5. It says they were given a number of how they could only take 2, they couldn't take 3. Why, if they knew how many they could take, why was there so much fighting? If
it was so all, the two and the three, the two and the three we're going to come back to. We're not there yet. But overall, the answer is because these are people who are, as Rebecca said before, feeding themselves off of this. There's a lot of desperation involved.
Thinking, since there are all these laws that I read here set out for them,
yeah,
it didn't, like, and you can only take two, not three, that it didn't seem so.
There are always rules. There are always rules, and there will always be people who, number one, break the rules, and number two, there will be people who will find ways to take advantage within the rules. It's human nature.
There's no rules for Bea. Bea, there's no rule. It's only for Leket.
So this is true in terms of the rules that Susan is talking about. Look, there are rules about Ben Adam L'Chaveiro in general, about how you deal with other people. Don't be surprised and shocked that people didn't always fulfill them. And especially, again, I come back to what I said about Beit Lechem, in the period of the Shofetim, this is the period of failure. This is the period when people are not doing what they're supposed to be doing. Boaz may be a good man, and he's going out and making sure that his farmers are, that his field workers are providing the gleaning. But seriously, don't be surprised at all that there's trouble out in the fields. It's not something to be surprised at.
What you are allowed to take may be more than what's available. A harvest isn't a guarantee of a certain amount.
This is true also. That sounds like Bruria, but I can't see you on my phone.
It's Toby.
Toby. Okay. Thank you, Toby. But it's, you're absolutely right. That's also true. Take a look at source number seven, please. Malbim points this out when Boaz shows up and he asks about Ruth. So there are different commentators who give different suggestions for why he asks about Ruth. What is the, you know, what is it that's driving him to ask about her? Malbim, as is his wont, picks up on the language. The fact that, if you take a look at sentence five, when Boaz asks the question, look at his wording. He doesn't say, "Mi hana'ara hazot," who is this young woman? He says, "Li mi hana'ara hazot," to whom is this woman? Who is she associated with? So take a look at Malbim. He says, "Kasher ra'a Boaz et Ruth melaketet levada basadeh ulfaneha omorim harbei." When Boaz saw Ruth collecting on her own in the field, and he sees that she has all these sheaves in front of her. And remember what we said last time. Sheaves, not stalks. Omarim are sheaves, bundles. He sees all this stuff. She's doing really well. Chashav shehi achat mineshei umibenot kotzrim. He thought she must be the wife of a harvester, or the daughter of a harvester. V'chashav shakotzer isha o avia gireish yeter ha'aniyim shetalaked hi levada. He thought, one of my workers is running interference for his wife or his daughter to be able to collect. And is even allowing her to collect from the sheaves. So Boaz says, there's someone here abusing the system. His instinct when he gets to the field, says Malbim, is to spot what seems to be unfair play and to correct it. That's a way to look at it, is there are things that go on in the field that are untoward and inappropriate, and Boaz is somebody who wants to correct it. We're going to see more a little bit later about this in terms of the practice of mixed gleaning. So hang in there. We're going to see more about that shortly. But Boaz is... Sorry?
If we take what Rebecca said, that they talk and they know things, how could he, and we've already said they've been there for a little bit, and we had reasons, maybe she lived off their own farm, whatever, how did he not know who she was?
So, the fact that he doesn't know her the instant he turns up, is that what you're asking?
Yeah, he should have known if we're talking, if they've been in Beit Lechem for a while. We've just said that they learn so much by gossip. How could he not know that Naomi's back and Naomi brought the daughter?
And the answer is, the fact that he doesn't know right away could be for any number of reasons, right? It could be that he doesn't know because he's clueless, he's not, you know, tuned in. It could be he doesn't recognize her from afar. He's an older man, by all accounts, in this story. It's entirely possible that he can't, you know, he doesn't have the distance vision for it. You can give any number of reasons for why he doesn't know. That's okay. Okay. So what I want to show you, though, along with this, goes back to the question we asked last time of who exactly Boaz is trying to help here. It seems like he's giving her special treatment. What about everybody else? Don't shame her. Don't yell at her. Don't give her a hard time. So the piece that I would add to this view that the fields are a hostile and dangerous environment is that Boaz does want to provide extra care for Ruth. And this goes back to what I said to Ricky before. Boaz does want to provide extra care for Ruth. Take a look in chapter 2, sentence 9, where Boaz instructs the, he says, go see where they're harvesting. Follow them. I've warned them not to touch you. When you're thirsty, drink from whatever the youths draw. That wasn't something that everybody had a right to. This is the workers' water supply that she's going to have access to. It's an example of giving her special status, recognizing that, recognizing who she is. If you take a look at sentence 14, he says to her that when it's time to eat, you should come use the resources that the harvesters have. Sit among the harvesters. And then in sentence 16, most powerfully, he instructs the harvesters, I want you to pretend to drop stuff and let her take it, and don't yell at her when she takes the stuff that you drop. He's giving her all sorts of special access because of who she is, and you can see it in the subtle bit of language, the distinction between the shibolim, the stalks, and the omarim, the sheaves. Go back to sentence 2. When Ruth said that she was going to collect, she says, alakatava shibolim. I'm going to collect from the stalks, the individual stalks. In sentence 7, the worker says to Boaz, Ruth is trying to take ba'omorim. She's trying to take from the sheaves, from the bundles. That could be read as just among the omorim, not that she wants to take the omorim. The Malbim has another read. But the worker fundamentally says to Boaz, she's going to take from the omorim. To which, look what Boaz responds in sentence 15. He says, Gambein ha'omorim telakeit. Let her collect the sheaves. Absolutely. Velo sachli muha, and don't yell at her for taking that. So Boaz is trying to look after her and give her special treatment. So we have three different approaches. Approach number one is, the fields aren't such a bad place, but she wants to find somebody who's going to be nice to her. Doesn't really explain Boaz's need to follow what his workers are doing. Second approach is that the fields might be particularly dangerous for Ruth as a Moabite. And then the third approach is, no, this really is a hostile environment. It's true. Boaz rides herd to try to make sure that everything is going to be okay. And in particular, this Boaz tries to make sure that Ruth is going to be all right. And yes, this fits the picture of Boaz as generous, to which we then have to ask. So if Boaz is so generous, if he's such a nice guy, why does he leave her to glean at all? Why does he need to just hand her stuff? Why does he send stuff to the house? To which the only answer I can give, and I think some of you anticipate this already, is it's to preserve her dignity. This way, it's not a handout. For the same reason we said Naomi didn't want to talk to him in the first place, because Naomi was embarrassed about having to appeal to somebody for help. So too here, he's saying, I'm going to make it easier for her. You know, it's like the father who has a kid who he wants to have go get a job, but the kid doesn't have the skills yet necessarily to be able to do it. So he turns to a friend and he says, listen, I'll give you the money and you give my kid a job. I want them to be able to accomplish this themselves. I may need to help a little bit along the way. That's what Boaz is trying to do here. Clear? Okay. As you can probably see on your screen, my internet connection is back, but I'm going to leave my phone on just in case, because I don't know what made it blip out in the first place. So I want to come back to the issue of mixed gleaning now, Because that's a very interesting thing going on in this story. In the Medrash, we read Ruth as very tsinua. She's somebody who acts in a way that really stands out as private, apart, and the Medrash picks up on it. Take a look on your sheet at source number, where am I on the sheet? Number 9, the Gemara in Shabbos. Asks the question of why Boaz is interested in this Na'ara out in the field. We've already given answers for why Boaz is interested. We said that maybe it's because he suspects that her success is because somebody's helping her out, right? But take a look here. Gemara says, V'chi darko shel Boaz lishol b'na'ara. Is that the way of Boaz, who we envision as this shofet and leader and all of that? He's asking after the young girl in the field. Amar Rabbi Elazar says, Devar chokhma ra'aba. No, but he saw wisdom in her. And this, Susan, was what you were talking about from your commentary. Shnei shibolim likta, shlosha shibolim eina likta. That if there were two stalks together, she would take it. If there were three, she would not. And this is because we have a rule regarding leket, that in the event that the farmer drops a large amount, it's not fair for the needy to take it. If there are three sheaves together, three stalks together, then they have to leave it. They let the farmer come back and pick it up. And Ruth was cognizant of that, and therefore she didn't take it. There's nothing in the text to indicate this. Let's be clear. The only thing in the text to indicate this is the fact that Boaz notices her, and the Gemara is asking, well, what could he have noticed? And it's offering a suggestion. Maybe what he noticed was that she knew her stuff. But then the Gemara continues. Bimas nisa tana, we learned in a braita, devar tsniut ra'aba. He saw tsniut in her. In what? Omdot mi'umad noflot miyushav. When she was taking standing grain for shichacha, stuff that they had missed, so then she stood, and if it was fallen grain she's picking up off the ground, she sat down to do it. Meaning that she did it in this very modest way. She did not bend over. She did not expose herself in doing this. Similarly, take a look at source number 10, where the Medrash reads the youth describing Ruth in a way that praises her. Hitchil hanar mesaper b'shivcha ubitzniut shaba. The youth begins talking about how wonderful Ruth is. Harayeshla kama yamim sheimanu shalonir eit afilu achad me etzbaot yadeh v'raglah. She's been with us for days, which, by the way, doesn't fit the text. The text really seems to be clear that this is like the first day she shows up in the field. Nonetheless, you could fit it in if you had to. I know how you could make it work. But the Medrash here says, the youth says, she's been with us for days, and yet no one has seen a finger. No one has seen a toe. We're pretty sure she has fingers and toes, but we just haven't seen them. The idea being that she is keeping herself, covered up. We don't know if she speaks a lot. We don't know if she's mute. And at that point, Boaz says, huh, that's really interesting. Let me find out more about this person in my field. So, and there's Medrash and Rut Rabba that's like this as well. There's more you could bring. So according to this view in the Midrash, Ruth is a remarkable person of remarkable character. Malbim, though, picks up on something odd in the text. Because Malbim always picks up on something odd in the text. If anyone is going to pick up on something odd in the text, it's going to be Malbim. If you take a look at sentence 8 in this chapter, Boaz says to Ruth, right? Halo shamat biti. Listen, he says. Don't go collect in another field. Don't leave here. V'chosid bakin. Here you shall stay. Imna'arotai, with my na'arot, right? There are women who are working in my field. That's who I want you to go with. Take a look now. Take a look in source number 11. Look what Malbim says. He says, V'chosid v'kinim na'arotai. Ki gam besade zeh hayu betzad echad poalim na'arim ubetzad echad na'arot shekatzru es hasadeh. He says, you know what? There were men working in the field, and there were women working in the field, and the men worked in one area, and the women worked in another area. Lo sel chilu laket bitzad shel ha'ne'arim, rak bitzad shel ne'arot. Boaz is saying to her, go hang out with the women workers, go glean in that area. That's step one. Go now to the end of the chapter, sentence 21, and look what Naomi says to, Ruth says to Naomi. Ruth reports what Boaz said. Vatomer Ruth ha-Moaviyah, Ruth said, Gam ki amar elai im ha-ne'arim asher li tidbakin adim kilu dot dot dot. Ruth says, Boaz said I should hang out with the ne'arim, the men. You see that? Says the Malbim in source number 12, completely ignoring the Gemara that we read, completely ignoring the Medrash that we said, in true Malbim fashion. He says, Be'emet hu amar lavacho tidbakinim na'arosai. He said to her, stay here with my na'arot. Ra ka'asher hi haita mo'aviyah, ba'asher, I should say, hi haita mo'aviyah, but she was a Moabite. Visham ein mitrachkim min hane'arim. In Moab, there was no practice of the genders being separate. Lo hevina ledayek bidvarav. So she didn't understand when he said na'arot, he meant only na'arot. She thought that he meant to be with his men. Because she really wanted to be with the men. Why? Because she thought she might find more than just grain in the field. She thought she might find a husband. And that, says the Malbim, is why if you look in the text, go back into the text for a second, in sentence 21, I think it was Brona who asked the question last week or the week before about all the times that we keep calling her Moaviyah. So I've been showing you that whenever the word shows up, there's a reason. Take a look at sentence 21 where it introduces her comment to Naomi by saying, Ruth the Moabite said, he told me to be with the men. So says the Malbim in the end of source number 12, yeah. Valzekra'a ha-Moaviyah. That's why it calls her ha-Moaviyah. Kibat Yisrael haita mevina. Because if he had been a native Israelite, she would have understood what Boaz was trying to tell her. And it's fascinating because if you look at the next sentence, in sentence 22, look what Naomi says back to her. Naomi says back to Ruth, Vatomer Naomi el Ruth kalata tov biti ki teitzi im na'arotav. Go out with his na'arot. Naomi understands, and Ibn Ezra says, take a look at source number 13 on the sheet. I'm rushing a little bit because I want to make sure we at least finish chapter 2. That when Naomi says, ki seitzi lil kotim na'arosav, when you go out to collect with his na'arot, female, v'loim ha-ne'arim, not with the na'arim, male. Because Boaz oversaw male and female harvesters. So Malbim and Ibn Ezra paint a different picture. The Gemara in Shabbos, the Medrash in Rut Rabba and Rut Zuta say, Rut is an icon of Tzniut. She is somebody who is modest and apart and she doesn't talk to the guys and all of that. And Ibn Ezra and Malbim say she's a Moabite. She had Moabite ways. And when she showed up in town, so she brought in these Moabite ways, which, by the way, would explain sentence 5. Right? In sentence 5, Boaz shows up and immediately wants to know, hey, who is this girl? Well, if she's the only girl gleaning with the men, she's gonna stand out. So maybe it makes sense that he would ask this question of, who is this? Because this is somebody who's not following the norms of the field. What do you think about this approach of Malbim and Ibn Ezra? Yes, Susan, I see you shaking your head.
I don't buy it. Look, you say, we know she wants to, she said, I want your people to be my people and all the rest of it. She's not stupid, we've also said that. So she comes to the field and sees all the women on one side and all the men on the other. I can't imagine that she would go to the men's side.
I agree, y'all.
It makes much more sense. There's something wrong there,
y'all.
If she wants to, if she
okay, so
wants
so Susan and Rose, Susan and Rose are not buying it. Okay.
No.
She was a good lady. She was a mensch, but she was smart. Smart's money says you don't go where it's so dangerous that you're going to get attacked.
So this is definitely true as well. I'm going to argue for Susan and Rose on different grounds. I think Malbim and Ibn Ezra have overshot their evidence. I gave you in source number 14 the verses that I think show that while it's a fascinating idea, it can't be correct. Go back to sentence 9 in the chapter, please. In sentence 9, Boaz specifically said, I've told my youth to leave you alone. When you're thirsty, go to the Kalim, right, and drink from whatever the Ne'arim draw. Whatever the men go get from the water, you get to drink. He does not make any distinction there. That's number one. Number two, in sentence 14, when he tells her about eating, she goes to sit mitzad ha-kotzerim. She goes to sit with the kotzerim, with the harvesters, and the word is masculine. You could tell me the men and the women ate together, but that's not consistent with the picture that Malbim and Ibn Ezra are trying to present here. So I don't see it there. And then she is with the men there. In sentence 15, she's with the men. In sentence 16, she's with the men. When he tells her that when he tells the Ne'arim, Ne'arav, not Ne'arotav, but Ne'arav, you should leave stuff for her. She's collecting behind them, and he seems to be okay with that. So I think the idea of Malbim and Ibn Ezra is a really interesting analysis of the psukim, but I don't think that I don't think it's consistent through the chapter. It's just not.
Didn't we learn in other places, like with Rivka, she wasn't the only one, like it was mixed. They went to the well, for example. I'm just saying, like the culture. They went to the well, they went together. Deborah went in the war with,
I mean, you can make the argument with Rivka. I mean, hold off on the Rivka point, actually, because, first of all, Devorah does not go to war. Devorah goes to sit on the mountaintop, and she very explicitly does not go into battle. But she's not. Devorah is very clear. She's a case where it actually is separate.
She very clearly says, no, I will not go.
Exactly. Not the point. The point
is,
But that's number one. But number two, the Rivka point actually goes with what I'm going to say next, which is the contrast between the approach of the Gemara and the Medrash on the one side and the Malbim / Ibn Ezra on the other side is, I think, not only a debate about how to read the text here, but also about how to view Tzniut overall, the idea of men and women being separate and so on. Is it to be viewed as a formal creation of society, meaning Jewish law says this is what you do, but otherwise you would never intuit it? Or is this actually to be understood as something that people are supposed to figure out? It's innate. The Medrash seems to be assuming that it's innate. You don't need to have lived among Jews in order to know this. It's a natural thing. Like the Gemara in Erevin says, based on a sentence in Mishlei, that you can learn sniut from certain animals that are known for being tsanua. On the other hand, the Malbim seems to think, no, this isn't something you pick up on your own. It's a legalism. There's a law. If you don't know the law, you don't know the law. Two different ways to look at sniut. I see we have 5 minutes left. Ricky, I see your question, but I'm not going to take it yet because I want to do two last things before we go. This is fascinating, and I could not leave it without showing this to you. I love this Ibn Ezra. In source number 15, this is hysterical. To me, anyway. We're told that root gets ke'efa se'orim, like an efa of barley. So I'm going to go through this quickly. Ibn Ezra says, and it was about an efa of barley. Once, he says, this is a little story, someone asked me the reason for an efa of barley. Someone was bothered by the phrase, and he went up to me in shul, and he said to me, what's with this phrase, like an efa of barley? I told him, there was no reason for that question. Tells us what happened. In other words, it's just telling us, you got an ephah of barley. That's all. If she had gotten less than an ephah, it would have been less than an ephah. If she had gotten three ephah, it would have said three ephah. It's just the amount. Then there was light, then I was light in his eyes. Meaning he didn't take me seriously. And he told me, there is a reason. I was silent. I let it go. I didn't ask him for a reason. And one day he came and told me there are many reasons. Ruth saw prophetically that one of her descendants would establish a pillar with her husband's name, because the Beis HaMikdash has a pillar by the name of Boaz. There's Yachin and there is Boaz. And Ephah, the word Ephah, was for the 96 pomegranates which are on the pillar. It's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. The gematria of the word Ephah. Ephah is 96. And Si'orim, barley, is like the word Shi'urim. And he quotes you from Mishlei, Sha'ar ben Afsho, he measured for himself. So this fellow says to Ibn Ezra, I know why it says Ke'efas Se'orim. It's a reference to the pillar in the Beis HaMikdash called Boaz that has 96 pomegranates on it. And it's built by Shlomo, who's a descendant of Ruth and Boaz. But he's not done. I got another reason. The Vayehi, right? Vayehi, Ke'efas Se'orim. Vayehi is two words. Aramaic and Hebrew. Vai, he. Meaning, it's awful. Vai is like woe, and he is a word of mourning as well. And it's because she saw that Avshalom, her descendant, son of King David, would be hanged. And Kaf Aleph, Ke'efah, hints at the fact that Avshalom is 21 when he dies. And then Ephah of barley means multitudes because it was heavy for him. So Vayihi Ke'ephah Se'orim is an expression of grief at what's going to happen to Avshalom. And then a third explanation, another reason. The first letter of Ke'ephah with the beginning of Se'orim, the Kaf, and the Sin, Rashi Tevot, the initials, has the gematria of Yishai, Jesse, who was also a descendant, who was fully righteous. So Ibn Ezra says, the guy asked me what Ke'efas Se'orim is for. I told him it's because that's how much grain she got. But he came back to me and he said, no, it's this gematria and it's this Rashi Tevos. And Ibn Ezra concludes and says, then he was happy and his heart was settled in him. It made him feel good. Isn't that great? Ibn Ezra loves math games, by the way. Ibn Ezra wrote math riddles. We have them. He did magic squares.
Well, Ibn Ezra, the Minister of Finance?
No, that's Abarbanel. That's Abarbanel. But Ibn Ezra loves math, but he's just having a good time with this guy. That was
for a convert who we found so many things to falter on. She's not only prophetic, but she's quite.
We only found one thing to falter on, possibly. Only one thing to falter on.
No, I'm in the past.
Have we had other things? I don't remember other faults. Okay. But the last item that I wanted to show you before we break for Shavuot is that Boaz shows us how Ruth overturns the biblical model of chosenness. There are parallels between Ruth and Rivka. Right? The Dot Mikra, Professor Meltzer, in source number 16, shows you that you have parallels between Ruth and Avraham, leaving your land and leaving your family and going off into Israel. And there are parallels to Rivka and the whole story at the well, and he goes into that in great depth. But there's a major difference between Ruth and Rivka. There's a difference between Ruth and Avraham, because Avraham gets a message from God, and that's not fair. Ruth doesn't get a message from God. But also, there's a difference between her and Rivka. Because why was Rivka picked to marry Yitzchak? What was the basis for it?
She was related.
Yeah,
and
family.
It's not the chesed.
I'm sorry. It's not the chesed. If the servant of Avraham, and I see that it's already 2:30, but we lost 4 minutes to my internet.
If the
servant of Avram shows up at the well and picks the one who's a Baalat Chesed, then he has failed in his mission. He had one job. His job is find the relative. That was it. He used the Chesed when he said to God, hey, I hope the relative is going to do this, and then I'll know that this is the one, and it works out that way. Hashem makes sure to lead him to the right one. But what makes Rivka the right one is not her Chesed. What makes Rivka the right one is the genealogy. That's what does it. It's where the family is. On the other hand, Ruth is just the opposite. Ruth's Chesed overcomes her genealogy. It's not about the genes, right? If you go back to sentences 11 and 12 in our chapter, what Boaz says is I've been told all the wonderful things that you did. You left your family. You left your land. You came to a nation you never even knew before. May God reward you for pa'olech, for what you did. And the fact that you came lachso tachat kenafav, the fact that you joined the God of Israel. That's what impresses Boaz, and that's what impresses us as the readers. It's the reverse of Rivka. Rivka is selected because of who she's related to. Ruth is selected because of the kindness that she does. I don't mean to take anything away from Rivka. I feel like I've gone too far in that direction, and I don't want to do that. Rivka is awesome for many, many reasons beyond the scope of this year. But nonetheless, what I think Ruth does is she overturns the model of being chosen as she earns her way into it. There's no chosenness for Ruth. So I'm going to stick around for a couple of minutes for questions and comments. I will, but I want to make sure that everybody gets a chance to go who wants to go. I wish everybody a Chag Sameach and daven for better news from Israel. God willing, everybody should be safe.
Amen.
And if
anybody wants to hear Elaine a reading of Ruth, they should go on the Shar Shemayim